The stock market seemed like it just didn't care.
But now Wall Street's paying attention to the debt ceiling drama.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, and for Jeremy Hobson, it's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Thursday, July 28th.
Coming up, jobless claims drop to a three-month low.
One county in Alabama could choose to go for broke today.
And later, going out on a limb in Toronto. That's coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
I think it's safe to say, Stacey, stock markets are waking up from the slumber of the past few weeks when they seemed less than bothered by the debt ceiling drama going on in Washington. Yeah.
Well, in that case, maybe it would have been better if they just kept sleeping.
Exactly. traders now, behind-the-scenes traders, are preparing for a possible doomsday. And we're seeing the effects today in something called the repo market. And Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore is with us to explain what's going on. She's with us from the studios of Station WNYC this morning. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, good morning.
So what is the debt ceiling debate doing to the repo market?
Well, the first thing I need to say is that repos are not about repossession. So
okay,
your car is
good.
Safe. Repo in this case stands for repurchase agreements. It's this weird dark corner of the market that even a lot of professionals don't know about. The debt debate is causing a lot of banks not to trust each other as much right now. And because they don't trust each other, they're demanding higher interest rates from each other. And we're seeing that in the repurchase market. So let's take a step back. Let me tell you how this thing works.
All right.
When banks and hedge funds close for the day, they don't always have all the money they need on hand to settle their loans. So they use these repurchase agreements to fund each other overnight. It's like a little bond. And when they make their books right at the end of the night, they say to each other, "Can you buy this little bond for me?" And big banks and hedge funds use these repurchase agreements to pay each other back with interest. And they pay each other with interest at the end of every night. But it's like a home loan where you need collateral. Banks need collateral too. And most of the time they use treasury bonds. But when the debt debate is making us question how risky even treasury bonds are, the banks are skittish and they're asking each other for more interest.
So this is all about banks and banks between banks. What does this mean for you and me?
Well, look, if it's all related to us, if the U.S. can't pay its bills, the country will have to pay higher interest rates. And so will everyone else. People who have mortgages, people who have credit cards, car loans, and of course, banks too. So it relates to all of us.
All right. Marketplace's Heidi Moore reporting from New York for us. Heidi, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
The debt ceiling battle is setting up to be a squeaker. The U.S. Treasury has said the deadline to raise the debt ceiling is Tuesday, August 2nd. Meanwhile, a vote is set for today on a revised plan from Republican House Speaker John Boehner to raise the debt ceiling for just a few months. That's got investors rushing to safety and others seeing opportunity. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins me now. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Chris, how are investors able to make money off of a downgrade or a default?
There are three main tactics, Stacey. One is the sort of safer, more opportunistic bets. Then there are the more speculative bets that are going to make a profit off of a decline. And then the classic plays.
Tell me about some of the safer bets.
Okay, the safer bet, stocks might break. And you picked out the stocks you want to buy. As soon as they plummet, you buy those stocks, you hold on to them. Then there's going to be a deal. There will be a deal. Market rally, and you sell them.
And what about the more speculative plays?
This is where you start having fun. Now you can put into bear market mutual funds or these exchange traded funds that for every percentage point the S&P 500 drops, you know, you'll gain three times the amount of money. I mean, all kinds of fun if you're on Wall Street. But typically what you're trying to do is play off a decline and profit from the decline in the bond market or in the stock market.
What are some of the other ways investors could potentially benefit?
We can't end this conversation without talking about gold. I mean, gold
I knew
is
it
the
was coming.
Classic,
I did.
It was coming. It's the classic catastrophe play. Gold's at over 1,600. If you adjust for inflation, it sure looks like it's heading toward its all-time peak. But you got some other plays. The Swiss franc, it's at an all-time high against the U.S. dollar. And then the Australian dollar, 28-year high. The Canadian dollar, highest since 2007. So again, money's fleeing in. And then, of course, if there's a deal or when there's a deal, you'll see a lot of selling.
What about those of us with 401ks and 403bs? Is there any way that we can possibly protect ourselves or benefit from this situation?
Think about all the turmoil of the past 5 years. Most people probably have a pretty conservative portfolio in their 401k, 403b. Stay the course and let the madness go on.
That is our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Well, Stacey, Chris, government officials in Jefferson County, Alabama are meeting today to consider a couple of options. Either settle a $3.2 billion sewer debt with creditors or file for Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Now, that would be the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. From Birmingham, Gigi Duban explains the dilemma.
The county has actually flirted with the idea of bankruptcy for the last 3 years. Today, commissioners hold out hope that last-minute talks with Wall Street creditors will bring a settlement. The sticking point in negotiations has been sewer rate increases. Creditors want a 25% rate hike, but County Commission President David Carrington says that's too high.
The ratepayers have experienced more than a 300% increase over the last 5 or 6 years. Basically, our citizens are tapped out on this regard.
Melissa Woodley teaches finance at Samford University in Birmingham. She says filing Chapter 9 wouldn't surprise anyone.
The damage is done. It's not like we're keeping it a secret that we're in financial distress and the bankruptcy is going to tip everybody off. Everybody realizes that the credit rating has been cut to junk.
County Commission President David Carrington says at this point, he's not worried about the county's reputation. He says without a reasonable settlement offer, he will vote for bankruptcy today. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
By the year 2020, almost half of the healthcare spending in this country will come from the government. That's according to new data from the trade journal Health Affairs. Here to talk about this with us is J.B. Silvers with the Department of Finance at Case Western Reserve University. Good morning, J.B.
Good morning.
Apparently, government spending in healthcare is going to reach $2.2 trillion in 2020, which is pretty high. Where is this price hike coming from? Is it healthcare reform? What is causing this price increase?
No, it's a fairly small amount from healthcare reform, just a fraction of a percent, and that's mainly due to expanded coverage. It's mostly due to expanded use of services. We just keep using more healthcare every year.
What does more government money going into healthcare mean for the healthcare industry?
Well, if you look at the way the market has seen healthcare, it's a growth industry. It's one of the bellwethers of the economy. That's the good side. The bad side is that means we pay more and more. So for the industry, this has been great. For the rest of the world, it's a big expensive thing that they'd rather not be paying.
What can be done to cut those costs, if anything?
We need to change how we use healthcare and how much of it we use in an intelligent way, using things that really work, processes that really work, and medications and such, and not be using so many things on people that for which is not effective. And those are really winners, basically reorganizing how we provide healthcare.
J.B. Silvers is the chair of the Department of Banking and Finance at Case Western Reserve University. J.B., thank you so much.
Thank you.
Today, the Murdoch media empire is again in the news. The attention will not, though, be on Rupert Murdoch this time, but on his son, James. James Murdoch is set to appear at a board meeting for British TV company B-Sky B today. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
It is business as usual at Britain's biggest TV company, B-Sky B. That's according to one of the board directors. But the claim looks hollow in the aftermath of the phone hacking scandal. The Murdoch-controlled News Corp has dropped its bid for full ownership of the broadcaster. And James Murdoch's job as chairman is under pressure. One lawmaker has just called for the police to investigate whether he misled Parliament. Professor of Journalism at City University, Roy Greenslade, says James Murdoch should step down as head of B-Sky B.
I thought it would have been more tactful if he had stood aside at least until we see the end of the hacking investigation.
Apart from a major police probe and a full public inquiry, the Murdoch family face an investigation by Britain's broadcasting regulator as to whether they are fit and proper people to run a TV company. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Some good news on the job front this morning. Fewer people filed for first-time unemployment benefits last week, 24,000 fewer, to just under 400,000. That's according to a Labor Department report just out. And we find out that that number, just under 400,000, is the lowest level since last April. Time Warner Cable said today its second quarter profit was up 23%, thanks in part to more business.
Well, we've got numbers at our website, marketplace.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at S. Vanek-Smith.
And I'm at Radio Chio.
The British Advertising Standards Authority has just banned two makeup ads, Steve.
Uh-oh.
I know. A Lancome ad with Julia Roberts and a Maybelline ad with Christy Turlington.
Yeah.
They were deemed to be misleading for being too airbrushed. And I just, Steve, I have to say, on behalf of women everywhere who maybe don't look like Julia Roberts or Christy Turlington, yeah, even on one of their less airbrushed days, I just want to give a shout out to the British Advertising Standards Authority and thank them for that.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
As the clock continues to count down to a default deadline coming up, negotiators have stopped talking about including help for the unemployed in a final deal. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look at why.
Remember that grand bargain between House Speaker John Boehner and President Obama? It included a little stimulus spending, giving employers a tax break, and letting them bring home profits earned abroad in hopes they'd use the money to hire. Now those very modest ambitions are gone. Ryan McConaghy is a policy analyst at the centrist Third Way think tank.
The imminent specter of default is driving the discussion to just what can be done to raise the debt ceiling and get both sides to sign off.
Not everyone agrees that the government should spend money to boost employment. Some Republicans say cutting spending will create jobs. Economist Donald Marin was one of President Bush's top advisors. He says that's true in a healthy economy, but not now.
We're in what's sometimes called a Keynesian world, where if you do sharp budget cuts, that will result in less employment.
Marin says jobs will be back on Washington's agenda eventually because unemployment is voters' biggest concern. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And now the Marketplace Global Perspective. On the island of Cyprus, all the cabinet members there have handed in their resignations. There's been economic turmoil on the island in the past few weeks from power disruptions and now from a credit downgrade from Moody's, meaning it could be the fourth European country to need a bailout. The BBC's Tabitha Morgan is with us now from Nicosia. Hi, Tabitha.
Hello.
I know Cyprus is well connected to Greece. How exposed is it to the problems, the Greek debt problems going on?
First of all, the Cypriot banks are more robustly structured, shall we say, than the Greek banks. So I don't think they're in any danger of folding anytime soon. But there has been for some time now considerable concern that they are very exposed to the Greek banks in particular. And this has been, I think, one of the major reasons why the island has recently been downgraded by one of the major agencies. The island's growth forecasts have also been reduced at the same time, largely due to an additional complication, namely the destruction of the island's main electricity generating plant in a freak explosion a couple of weeks ago.
How damaging has that munitions blast been, I mean, to the economy on Cyprus?
This is the height of the tourist season in Cyprus. Tourism is the mainstay of the Cypriot economy. The power outages which have ensued from the loss of the power plant have been unpredictable. The electricity authorities are not able to tell anyone when they're going to be. As you can imagine, this is having devastating consequences for businesses who can't plan, who can't reschedule, who can't anticipate. It's also having a hugely damaging effect on the retail sector. Shops just have no alternative. They have to close for the duration of the power cuts.
The BBC's Tabitha Morgan in Nicosia. Tabitha, thank you.
Thank you.
Here in the U.S., we're going to get the latest earnings report from cosmetic maker Avon today. Analysts expect it to at least match profits from a year ago. Avon, of course, is known for door-to-door selling of makeup and other items. Over in Uganda, one U.S. organization is using that model to help consumers get often unavailable products. And this month, the service is expanding. Here's the BBC's Anna Cavell.
With a $75 loan, women in Uganda are being turned into entrepreneurs. 700 of them have been hired by Living Goods to sell its health products door-to-door in their rural communities. A dose of medicine can cost just 20 cents to buy, but the transport costs to reach the store that sells it could be $2. And buying in bulk means these female entrepreneurs can get the products cheaply and cut out the travel costs for their customers. Joe Spiker is the vice president of the San Francisco-based organization. He's confident the business model will work because it's inspired by an American household name.
Avon was founded in the 1860s in upstate New York, and the conditions there are very similar to the conditions that you would find today in sub-Saharan Africa. Primarily social networks, underemployed women, and low penetration of essential products.
Living Goods has what it calls a double bottom line. It aims to both make a profit and improve community health. But big businesses are also looking at this model with interest. Procter & Gamble is already selling its products through Living Goods saleswomen. And this 19th century business model is being updated with 21st century technology. From this month, customers will start receiving targeted text messages on their mobile phones with information about discounts and promotions. In Kampala, I'm the BBC's Anna Cavell for Marketplace.
And finally, there's a new attraction, Stacey, at Toronto's giant CN Tower. Do you know what tower I'm talking about? It's the really tall one. It's a huge building. I think it's like 1,800 feet high. It's one of the tallest structures in the world, as a matter of fact. And starting Monday, you're going to be able to walk outside of the observation deck up top onto a metal see-through grate and look down 1,200 feet below.
That sounds awful.
No rails. Hopefully you're not going to drop anything, right? You're going to be in a red jumpsuit and you'll be tethered to the building, of course, so you don't fall down. But you'll be just out there looking out at this at the skyline, at the big lake there. Your body will be tethered, but what's not tethered, Stacey, is the fee of $184 that will disappear from your wallet because of your fascination with heights.
Probably you're also going to have to buy lunch again. I don't know.
You'll need more money.
I don't like heights.
After that. Yeah, I can't imagine 1,200 feet up. Man, that's a lot of wind.
I know.
And that's a lot of space between you and the safe earth.
So, I know.
In Los Angeles, safely on the ground, by the way, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And in New York at the studios of WNYC, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.